Journey Through the Old Testament, Part 7. This is predominantly about the nation of Israel in modern day times. The presentation begins with an account of a mission hospital built at Mokrok, where Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and Israel come together. Listening time is approximately 50 minutes.
$1,000 they need right there to put it down. It's going to be a 14-bed hospital. Alan Asalto, the doctor, had an insurance policy that had been chasing her around the world. I mean, she was brought up in Korea. Here are folks who are missionaries in Korea. And she went to school in Korea. And so this insurance policy had been chasing around the world and caught up with her there at Amman, and it was for $1,000. So we used to have them come, that was before 67, we'd have one of them come, or a couple of them come to Jerusalem whenever I had a tour group, and I never feel that it's right for me to take a group of believers anywhere without letting them know what the Lord's doing in a place like that. And I think the first thing that we ever were able to get for them was a washing machine, and it was from Germany, and that thing just wore out just a few months ago. But in the meantime, we've got a nice new commercial thing there. And then there was a fellow that went with me. He was 56. His wife had died the year before. His name was Lester Gates. He's from Ohio. And we had quite a, in those days, we used to have large groups and 22-day tour. And so he never impressed any of us. Lester didn't. I mean, he was a farmer and he was quiet. But he heard those girls give the talk and about the need. So without our knowing anything about it, he wrote to them, and he said that he'd be willing to come over, bring a truck, a concrete mixer, tools, and any work that needed to be done on that 14-bed hospital, he'd be glad to do it. And when they felt he was finished, he'd go back to America, and he'd leave everything behind. He's still there. We have any doctors here. If you ever look at the x-ray of his heart, you say he doesn't have a right to live. He should have died a long time ago. But he had the vision. And one of the members of our group, on one occasion, gave $1,000. We added some more to it and bought 25 acres on the desert to start a work. Because Lester had the vision for doing this. When the architect from California came out, and he was not a believer, but Lester had laid the whole thing out. And so then the architect wanted to know how much money we had, because you have to have some money if you're going to start building. I said, what? I said, how much money do you have? I said, money? We don't have any money. Well, he thought they were really, the elevators didn't run all the way to the top. And but anyway, started. And today, our beautiful 60-bed hospital, right there in the desert, we have patients from Saudi Arabia, from the royal family, even. They come by camel, and 60-bed hospital, 10,000 trees. And then Lester, you know, water is expensive. We were getting from water from Azraq, where Lawrence of Arabia was encamped when he was over there. But that was very expensive and prohibitive today to get water from there. But Lester had the vision to sink a well there in the desert. And the well digger said it can't be done. It was almost like it was in Burma. But he said, you go ahead and do it. So they drilled and drilled and drilled. Finally, they poured acid down there. That didn't do much good. Finally, had them put dynamite down there, and the water started flowing. And the more water you pull out, the more you get. So we have our own water supply, and most of these who come, you know, they've never slept on a bed, and it's a hard job to get them to sleep on that bed because it's we may fall off the table. And the women have never had a shampoo. They live out there, and you probably wouldn't either if you had to walk for miles with the donkey, because getting water is the woman's job. And to get that water and bring it back in goatskins or sheepskins, and the way they kept the livestock out of the hair was with camel urine. But when they come to the hospital, and now we have, of course, they've learned it from the Israelis, we have six reflectors on the top where they get hot water, and they come and have the first shampoo, and they have beautiful hair. They want a shampoo every day. They get one a week. And the fellows have never heard of pajamas. But now, if the tops don't match the bottoms, they put up an awful howl. But I'll give you one thrilling story. You told me to take 30 seconds. I have. I've taken 30 seconds, and I'm going to take more than that, because it's important. I want you to know what God's doing over there. He said, I will build my church, and he's doing it. When the new hospital was being to be dedicated, Mr. Graham was coming over to do it, because Franklin had done a lot of work for more than a year, one of the best workers they ever had there. And so Billy Graham was coming over, but his father-in-law had died, and he couldn't come, and I happened to be in that area, so I had the privilege of doing it. But one of the first patients that came by camel from way down near Petra, where you folks have been. And he had come on camel, and when they examined him, they found out that he was just about gone, and they didn't want a casualty right off the bat. So they turned him away. But then Aileen's conscience got the better of her. And she sent a runner across the desert, caught up with him, brought him back, but they were sure he wasn't hearing anything. They had preaching in the wards, but they were sure he was so far gone he wouldn't hear anything. But one night when she was making the rounds, he said, I thought I was going to die the other night. Said, we did too, because they get very cold with no lungs to pick up the oxygen, and said, I was so afraid to die. And I've talked to the one, I called out, prayed to the one that they talk about in here, and I asked him to help me so I wouldn't be afraid to die, and all of a sudden I wasn't afraid to die, but tell me, what is his name? And I thought, how much did you have to know when you were born the first time? You didn't have to know very much. How much do you have to know to be born the second time? He became a believer, and with the wonderful medications we have now, he responded. And then he had a burden for his wife and children who were back home, which is a goat hair tent, and said, I want to be able to tell them. So they gave him a crash course in reading, and they teach them the Gospel of John in those terrible, terrible Arabic songs. If we have any Arabs here tonight, I'm sorry to talk about your music, but all the Jews love Arabic music, and the Arabs like it, even though it's not my particular style. But anyway, they teach the Gospel of John to them with these Arabic tunes. So while we are sitting here in this comfortable auditorium tonight, you have at least one Christian brother down near Petra, living in a big goat hair tent, and he is a Christian brother. In fact, we have reason to believe that there are Christian believers in every tribe in that whole area as a result of that hospital. And it really is thrilling. So we're going over there in 2 weeks because I've been on the board of that thing. I don't do much, but I'm on the board. But out of our tours have come, you know, while we were there and then afterward, and people, I expect between $2 and $3 million to support that work. So we're just grateful for that. And I leave from there on Friday, and I fly into New York, Frankfurt, Germany, New York, spend the night on Friday, and on Saturday go down to Panama, and spend 3 weeks from today, we'll be in Panama, and speaking there at the military base in Panama. And so it goes. But tonight, I'm to talk to you about Israel. And everybody wants to know about Israel, because there's not a television broadcast of news that has to do with international news. There's not a newspaper in the world, regardless of the size of it, but every single day we'll have at least one article in there about that little tiny state of Israel. And it is so tiny. It is so tiny, you can't even write the name on the real estate. My wife knew that I like maps, and she gave me a beautiful National Geographic globe. And so I spun that thing around to find Israel, and sure enough, I found it. I found that little thing there, but they can't write their name on it, so the name is out in the Mediterranean, because, you know, Israel is on three bodies of water, the Med, the Red, the Dead. And So I looked and I found the name out there in the Mediterranean with a little arrow pointing in to let me know where it was. And I want to say tonight that the greatest event that has happened in most of our lives, well, our lifetime, and anyway, the greatest event that has happened in centuries, probably 1900 years, has been the rebirth of the State of Israel. On November 27th, 1933, 1947, I'm sorry, with a vote of 33-13 at Lake Success, New York, when the United Nations had decided that Israel should be reborn. There will always be an Israel. It's impossible to have a world without an Israel. There may not always be a United States, but there will always be an Israel. There may not always be a Korea, but there will always be an Israel. There may not always be a Russia, but there will always be an Israel. And you can't have an Israel without a Jerusalem. And they're there. Did you ever notice this in the book of Jeremiah? I am with thee, saith the Lord, to save thee. Though I make a full end of all nations to which I have scattered thee, yet will I not make a full end of thee. And they have been scattered and sifted among the nations of the earth. Wherever you go, you can find two things, a Jew and a Coca-Cola bottle. In fact, they found Jews down to South Pole, the iceberg family. And you find ice cream cone about wherever you go in the world. And in fact, someone asked me while I was here, where do you think the 10 lost tribes are? I said, I know where they are tonight. It's January. And during January, February, and March, they'll be on Miami Beach. So many that they call the bridge between Miami and Miami Beach the Jewish Passover. They call it that. There are about 15 million Jews in the world. There are 3.5 million of them in Israel. And they are there from 120 countries of the world. This has never happened before. They are there. I say we read about it now in our papers, and you hear about the problems they're having in the Gaza Strip and in the refugee camps. And I'd just like to say a little word before I say something here tonight about that. There are refugees everywhere in the world. And I'm not depreciating the refugee problem. Yeah, they are living in horrible conditions, terrible conditions, many of them. But when I go to Lima, Peru, I find refugee camps there. But they're in no position whatsoever to help those people. When you go where the pastor and I were, the ex-pastor, whoever he is, went up to Dhaka, and to see him then going out to the women and getting their arms full of garbage to take home, and there is a refugee problem there. And the people living on an average of about $100 to $125 a year. We never hear anything about the Jewish refugees. There were 330,000 of them in Morocco. There were 100,000 in 1955, the first time I was in Egypt, 100,000 Jews, 330,000 Jews in Morocco, in Algeria, in Iraq, in Damascus, and sifted and scattered among the nations of the earth, but they had to leave everything behind. And they went to the land of Israel. But they were never treated as refugees. They were children who had come home. Golda Meir told me herself that she pleaded, she stood there and pleaded with those Arabs not to leave, and explained to them the kind of camps they'd be living in. But they did, because they were told that in 1948, when Israel was reborn, when Ben-Gurion declared the State of Israel, they were told that they were going to join together. There were only 500,000 Jews then from 70-something countries, And they couldn't even speak to one another because they didn't know the same language. They didn't have weapons. Ammunition would fit one gun, wouldn't fit another gun. The only country that ever came to their rescue was Czechoslovakia. No other nation ever came to their rescue. But she had told them what things would happen. I say the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem said, come over on our side. Leave your home down in Gaza. Leave your home in Tel Aviv. Leave your homes and come over with us. And in 2 weeks, we'll drive these Jews into the sea. King Saud, Ibn Saud of Saudi Arabia, said, let us sacrifice 10 million of our Arabs and blot out this cancer from the world's surface once and for all. He didn't volunteer to go himself. But they fought, and they fought to a standstill. And they didn't defeat them. This is one of the great miracles. This happened in 1947-48, until they came to an armistice. And if you've looked at that line, you'd know that anybody with any sense would never draw up a line like that, which is called the West Bank. No country in the world, there were only two countries in the world that ever recognized that Jordan had a right to the West Bank, and that was Pakistan and Great Britain. No Arab country ever recognized that that Jordan had a right to the West Bank. You say, well, how did all of this happen? Well, up until 1917, not one of the modern countries in the Middle East existed. Did you know that? Because for 400 years, from 1517 to 1917, that whole area was one big empire, the Ottoman Empire, Turkish Empire, very cruel. That included the whole business. What you know of today as Israel was called Palestine. Where did they get that word? You won't find it in the Bible. You get the word Palestine from the Romans, because they were there for 500 years. And the Romans coined that word because the Philistines were the great enemies of the Jews, and that irked them, and they did that simply to irk them. But Palestine was on the west bank of the Jordan River. On the east bank of the Jordan River was Transjordan. Well, the result, the main result of the First World War was the destruction of the Ottoman Empire. So if you're going to give the land back to anybody, you've got to give it back to the Turks. They are 400 years, that's a pretty long time. But King Hussein, that brave little king in Jordan, and if you ever got to know him, I think you'd love him. King Hussein of Jordan, his great-grandfather was a ragtag Bedouin who was a descendant of Muhammad. Well, his son, Abdullah, decided he wanted to be something. And so the British, who happened to be there, and I'm getting way ahead of my story, I'll come back and pick up where I should have been, but the British made him the emir of Moab. But he decided he didn't want to simply be an emir, he wanted to be a king. So he appointed himself a king, and he became king of what then was Transjordan. Golda Meir told me herself, because I told her about our hospital, I said, for pity's sake, don't let your boys, when they're planes, because they have the best air force in the world, said, don't let your boys bomb our hospital there in Mafraq. And she told me the time that she dressed as a Bedouin woman and went through Mafraq and went to see King Abdullah twice. And he gave her his word that they would never jump the Jordan, said, we need more Jews from Europe to bring their culture and to bring their know-how into this part of the world. But he broke his word. And they jumped the Jordan River. And they fought until you get that armistice. Then on the Isle of Rhodes, under Ralph Bunche, they met to draw up the lines of what would be Israel and what would be Jordan. The Arab countries were there. This is history. I can't change history. No Arab country would sign that agreement because they would be putting their name on a piece of paper with a Jew. with an Israeli. That's why you've had that problem. That's why you've had these terrible refugee problems. If anyone were capable of taking care, and they call them our brothers, and they call themselves our Arab nation, if anybody would ever be able to take care of their brothers who are living in these wretched camps, it would be the Arab countries like Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and all of the oil countries. They would be able to do it. But they haven't given one teaspoonful of food. Not one penny. We have been supporting 70%. They will not allow them to get jobs, because that would mean they're no longer refugees. They live in these terrible, wretched camps. Nobody wants them. Gaza, for 19 years, was under Egypt, but they couldn't get a passport. They couldn't go anywhere. There was a curfew. They had to stay right there. Since 1967, under occupied territory, under administered territory, that's what it is, their children go to school. They can travel anywhere they want freely, all over the state of Israel. They grow oranges down there, and they have modern packing facilities that have been learned from the Israelis. Now, I'm not trying to put a white hat on one and a black hat on another. There are some pretty mean ones among those Israelis, I'll tell you that. And may I say this by a strong parenthesis, as much as I love Israel, Israel is the most anti-Christ country in the world. They hate him. They hate Jesus Christ. These who live in Gaza, and of course that was one of the five Philistine areas. There was Gaza, there was Ashdod, Ashkelon, Ekron, and Gath. Now they're able to drive their trucks. They have two sets of number plates. They get to the Allenby Bridge there in the Jordan River. They take off the Israeli plates. They have Jordanian number plates, and they drive across, and their oranges go down to the Arab Emirates and to the Arab countries. And that happens by the hundreds every single day. Then when they come back, they put the Israeli number plates on and go back to Gaza, and they get another load of fruit and vegetables, and they've learned so much from the Israelis who have been there. But no country wants them. Syria doesn't want them. Jordan doesn't want them. Egypt doesn't want these Palestinians that are in those camps. So it's almost an unsolvable problem. Of course, Mr. Begin was pretty rough character, and he was the one that blew up the King David. If some of you are old enough to remember that occasion, he posed as a milkman and coming in with big cans of milk, and it was really explosive and blew up the end of the King David Hotel. But he was the one who said, this land is Judea and Samaria, and he's dead right. If you're going to go by the teachings of the Bible. But you say, how did they get into this mess? After the First World War, they gave France, then came the League of Nations, and the League of Nations gave France a mandate over two countries today, Lebanon and Syria. Didn't own it, but they simply had a mandate. They gave Britain a mandate over what was Palestine, Transjordan, Egypt, Iraq, all of that area. They burned their fingers. They couldn't do it. They fought both ends against the middle, the Arabs against the Jews, the Jews against the Arabs. So finally they said, we're going bankrupt. We can't keep it anymore. And so they said, we're leaving. And that happened in 1948. But, you know, Lebanon didn't become Lebanon until 1940s. Syria didn't become Syria until the 40s. Egypt didn't become Egypt until the 40s. They'd all been under the mandate, and before that, under the Ottoman Empire. And so there are those who say that the newcomer arrives, the Jew, and first he cheats the people out of their land, and he takes it away from them, Many don't realize that they paid simply for what you know of as the Valley of Armageddon, which is a 112 square mile piece of property that the Bible in the book of Isaiah calls the Fat Valleys, that they paid 500,000 pounds sterling. That's when the pound was $5. And they knew that, the ones that did it, they were severely chided from buying that from a Lebanese family that had been given to the Lebanese family as a wedding gift from the Ottoman Empire. So, but these Israeli, these Jews, knew what that was. When I used to go through there in 1955, malaria. There was yellow fever. Golda Meir went in there and worked. Used to put Vaseline on their body, long sleeves. They had big bonfires at night, no doctors, few nurses, no medication. And they knew that that was the Fat Valley. But there's a river that you know of, a biblical stream called the Kishon. You know two biblical stories about that. One, that's where Elijah took 450 false prophets of Baal down there to the brook Kishon and made their heads shorter. And then you also know that they, do you know the one in the Bible that asked for a drink of water, but instead of water, he got milk, which gave him Excedrin headache, number 82? A man by the name of Sisera. And he went in Jael's tent. Her dad, her husband wasn't home. He had no business being in that tent. You don't go to a tent unless the father is there. We still don't do it today, even as well as we know the family in this big tent. We call to see if he's there. Then we feel free to go in. And so Sisera had no business going in there. He was given a drink of milk. He was drowsy. He went to sleep. And she drove that tent, Jael drove that tent peg through his head. But that happened by that brook, Sisera, by that brook Kishon. But the Israelis knew that, the sands of the Mediterranean had blocked the outflow of that. And the water had backed up. And that's what brought in the malaria and yellow fever, which Alexander the Great had brought from India. And they drained that swamp so that today that is the breadbasket of Israel. When I was there about 3 weeks ago, there was the winter wheat that was planted. They have about 9 different crops that they grow in the valley of Jezreel, Megiddo, Esdraelon, and you know of it, Revelation 16:16, Armageddon. There's only one thing they can't grow there. They can't grow watermelons because the vines grow so fast. Where's watermelons out, dragged along the ground? And but it's something to see, that rich soil, and exactly as the Bible says it was, the Fat Valley. But then Israel was reborn, I say, in 1947. To me, it's very interesting that the Dead Sea Scrolls were found in May of 1947. You can't separate the people from the book. There are 4 things that God says are mine. He says, it's my word. The Lord Jesus is my son. It's my land. It's the only piece of real estate in the world that he calls my land. In the book of Joel, you read, I have a controversy with the nations. They have parted my land. And then he calls the Abraham's seed my people. Of course, they have, and Israel is a very peace-loving people. They want a piece of Lebanon. They like the peace of Syria and the peace of all of this. And so they're very peace-loving. And they have been looking for, of course, where they got into trouble. Moses was the one that got them into the trouble. On Mount Nebo, Moses had an impediment in his speech, and he was talking to Joshua, and he told him to take him to Canada. But Joshua thought that he said Canaan. What he should have done was to said, turn right, and then the Jews would have had the oil and the Arabs would have had the rocks from there. But anyway, Here is a nation that has been born in our lifetime. Here you have 3.5 million, and they're there, and they are there to stay regardless of their unbelief, and I will say they are unbelievers. Yeah, I have a friend, Brian Procroy, and he's been a believer 25 years. He's a doctor. I knew him a week when he was a week old in the Lord in Salisbury, Rhodesia. His father was a doctor, two brothers are doctors. It was a Christian nurse in South Africa who never said a word to him, but she was so consistent that one day he said to her, "What makes you different from other people?" And she said, "Dr. Procroy, Jesus Christ makes the difference," and hit him like a ton of bricks. And a week later, he came to Salisbury, and I was speaking, and I met him. We've been friends ever since, even though he's 100% Jewish. Yet when he went to Israel, they wouldn't give him citizenship. If he were a communist, an atheist, an agnostic, any kind of an unbeliever or anything, he would have been a citizen the day he arrived. But because he had accepted Jesus Christ, he couldn't have citizenship. Finally, he married a girl whose mother was a Messianic Jewess and her father was an Arab believer, Eva. And so they're there, their little family, and a wonderful church. I don't think there's a verse in the Bible he hasn't turned over. But I can't see how anyone today could be consistent in their living and be anti-Semitic, that is, I mean, hate the Jew simply because he's a Jew. If you ever get such a thing as a headache, and you're consistently anti-Semitic, that is, you hate the Jew because he's a Jew, I hope that you'll never have the unmitigated gall to take an aspirin tablet, because that happened to be the discovery of a Jew by the name of Bayer. We don't worry too much, do we, anymore, about our children or our grandchildren getting polio. When's the last time you knew, heard of any kid getting polio? Because of the work of two Jews, Jonas Salk and Sabin. You say, about they cleaned up on that, not a penny. Someone suggested everybody that had a child sent $1 to Jonas Salk. I would have been glad to do it, but since nobody else did it, I didn't send my dollar. The work of two Jews. I don't want you to get excited or anything, but there's a good high percentage here in this crowd here tonight, and you have heart trouble right now. Don't get alarmed about it. Your heart will last as long as you do. So don't. But you may go to the doctor, and he'll tell you you do have it, but he said, "We've got a little medication. We have Digitalis. I hope that you'll never have the unmitigated gall to take that, because that happened to be the discovery of another Jew by the name of Trebo." And every now and then, go to the dentist. Perish that thought. And when I go and say, "Well, we've got to do a little drilling today, but we can give you an injection," I said, "Double shot, doc." I said, "I don't like that. It'll give me..." I hope that you'll never allow them to put that stuff in there to keep, so you won't feel it, because that happened to be the discovery of another Jew by the name of Solomon Stricker. You can't get married. This young lady, this beautiful girl that sang for us this morning, is going to be married in 3 months, she told me. You can't get married in America if you're consistently anti-Semitic, because you have to take a Wasserman test. And Wasserman happened to be a Jew. I've been here now for 8 days, and I've already made up my mind. One reason I haven't accepted the pastor of the church is because I've noticed of what a high percentage we have that need the services of a psychiatrist. But I hope that you will never avail yourself of their services, because the one who is the father of all psychoanalysis happened to be a Jew by the name of Sigmund Freud. I hope you don't give the Salvation Army if you're consistently anti-Semitic. Because William Booth's mother happened to be a Jewess. And if you're alive today, And if he hadn't become a Christian believer, he could have gone back to Israel. And they would have accepted him as a citizen the first day he arrived. You couldn't be a communist because Karl Marx was a Jew. And you couldn't be a Christian. You couldn't be a Christian either because Jesus Christ was a Jew. He had a Jewish mother. He only worshipped in the Jewish synagogue. He wouldn't be here today if he were here. He'd be in the synagogue. He only preached to Jews. A Gentile woman came to him with a sick child and said, I can't give the children, that is the Jews, bread to you, a Gentile dog. In fact, the Bible doesn't have a very good word to say about a Gentile. You probably know that. That's one reason I've always loved the Bible, but that's one thing I have against the Bible. Not a decent word to say about a dog. And I wish that I had taken one night just to talk about my little dog that I had for 14 years. Little Samson, who weighed 5 pounds. But I'm sure he's there. But Jesus, the Lord Jesus, died as a Jew. And when he rose again from among the dead, no one has ever seen him since he rose from among the dead, except a handful of saved Jews. No Gentiles ever seen him. And when he returns to this earth, when he comes back to the earth, his feet are going to stand upon the Mount of Olives. And the Lord God is going to give to him the throne of his father David, and he is going to rule over the house of Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there shall be no end. I don't think anybody could ever accuse Mark Twain of being a Christian believer. But somehow Mark Twain went to what we call the Holy Land. It's not too holy, I'll tell you that. But I call it the Bible Lands. He came back, and this is what he said. He said the Jew could be vain of himself and not be ashamed of it. Yes, he could be excused for it. The Egyptian, the Babylonian, the Persian arose, filled the planet with sound and splendor, then faded to dream stuff and passed away. The Greek and the Roman followed, made a vast noise, and they are gone. Others have sprung up and held the torch high for a time, but it burned out and have perished. The Jew saw them all, beat them all, and is now what he always was, exhibiting no decadence, no infirmities of age, no weakening of his parts, no slowing of his energies, no dulling of his alert, aggressive mind. All things are mortal but the Jew. All other forces pass, but he remains. And then Mark Twain asked a question he couldn't answer. What is the secret of his immortality? But God answered it. And in the book of Malachi, I am the Lord. Therefore, ye sons of Jacob are not consumed. You told me I was supposed to be through by now. I'm going to keep going. I don't have to worry whether you're here next Sunday or not, because I won't be here. There's a sociological miracle of Israel. When you stop to think that they're there, when the nation was born, Jews from 72 countries, 500,000 of them, and of course it's always easy to be an expert. And the sociologists who were experts came from the country. They stay about a week. An expert is just a little spurt away from home. That's what an expert is. And they said, it's going to take you 100 years to ever make into one nation people that have come. Take a Jew from South Africa, another one from Yemen, another one from China, another one from Canada, another one from the United States, Mexico, Argentina, and bring them all together and make a nation out of them. One of them came back, and he said, I'm happy to eat my words. You've done it in half a generation. I don't have time to tell you tonight. I'm not taking the time to tell you how they did it, but how they made into one nation, and here they are all living there. But they had a little plan for doing that. So there has been the sociological miracle to bring them back. I've been to Israel a few times. I have never one time seen a drunk Israeli soldier. Never one time. I'm sure there are, but I've never seen one. Can't say that about the United Nations crowd. You can't see the rest of them. But there's also the language miracle. 100 years ago, there wasn't a person in the world that spoke Hebrew as his first language. They tried to revive ancient tongues. They tried to revive ancient Latin. I'm sure glad they never made any progress with that. I took 3 report cards full of Latin. And I took my report card home and showed it to my father, who came from Sweden. And he didn't know how they graded papers in America, a report card. And for Latin, I had F, F, F. I said, you know what that means? Fantastic, fantastic, fantastic. So he said, you're doing so well with that, you ought to drop that. It had already dropped me. They tried to revive ancient Gaelic. You go to Ireland, which is a lovely vacation. Really good, South Ireland. Very lovely vacation, inexpensive vacation. But you'll see the street signs in Gaelic. The kids don't care about Gaelic. They don't care about that. But a young man or a young woman will write a PhD thesis in nuclear physics, and they will write that in the Hebrew University or at the Technion, at the Weizmann Institute, and they will write it in Hebrew. Never been done before. And they've been gone back to the Bible. I don't have time to tell you how they did it. And who it was that had the vision for doing it. Because most of them said, why don't we use Yiddish? Why don't we use English? Everybody nearly speaks English or Yiddish. Nearly all the Jews speak Yiddish. And why? I said, no, we're going back to Hebrew. But it was made in Israel. You know how the old merchants are. And here they are. In our lifetime, been able to do that. And then I will wind up and finish. There is also the military miracle. I'll give you Israel's secret if you'll promise you won't tell anybody. Their philosophy of warfare has always been the same. Hit first, hit hard, talk about it later. They can't afford to go and wonder what the United Nations, they've been condemned by the Security Council more than any other, by far many, many times, than any other place on earth, even though there are many that need it. But they continue on. And when you hear their representative speak, he's the only one in the whole crowd makes sense. But anyway, their situation has always been the same. They've always been outnumbered by their enemies. They are outnumbered in the days of Joshua. They are outnumbered in the days of Gideon. Gideon only had 300 to go against the Philistines, or the Midianites. They were spread out there in the valley, and they couldn't even count them for number. Outnumbered in the days of King David. He only had 37 men. Nearly all of them were mercenaries. That's all he had, but they were men. Outnumbered in the days of David Ben-Gurion. You remember when they went 100 hours to the Suez in 1955? And Khrushchev sent word and said, if you don't pull back from the Suez, we'll send our volunteers. And Ben-Gurion said, send your volunteers and we'll take care of them too. Because he knew they were tied up in Hungary and Czechoslovakia. That's why he said that. And the Lebanese war, they shot down 92 Syrian, Russian-built planes and didn't lose one. We sent 3 of our planes off an aircraft carrier, and we lost 2 out of the 3. I hope that you'll pray for Israel. Jerusalem is the only city in the world that I know that you're told to pray for. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem, they shall prosper that love thee. And when an Israeli couple get married, that's what they say. That's almost a vow. If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, may my right hand wither, and may my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth. That's the marriage vow, if I forget thee. And there's something about that. When Jerusalem is at peace, the rest of the world is at peace. But when Jerusalem is in difficulty, the rest of the world is in difficulty. He said, I'll make you a burdensome stone, and anyone that messes with it, you read this in Zechariah, they shall be destroyed. And you only have to have a cursory knowledge of history to know that's true. You recall that in the Gospel of John in chapter 1, it said he came unto his own, and his own received him not. He said to the people, he said, I have come in my Father's name. You will not receive me. You have not received me. Another will come in his own name. And if we were to go into the subject of prophecy, there are two men. They may be living now. I don't know what time it is in God's clock. But there will be a great political leader and a great religious leader called the first beast and the second beast. Both of them are antichrist. There are many antichrists, but this will be, these men will be Satan incarnate as the Lord Jesus was God incarnate. And they are going to receive this one. He said, I have come in my Father's name. You won't receive me, but another will come in his own name, and him you will receive. And said, you will never see me again. That's what he said to them. You'll never see me again until after being ground down to the very bottom in that which is called Jacob's trouble. Matthew 24 and 25, Mark 13, Luke 21, Revelation 6 to 18. When you have read that and you read of the terrible tribulation and trouble that's coming to Israel and out of the deep agony that is going to be theirs, like the world has never known before. It will never know anything like it again, except the days were shortened, no flesh would ever be spared. They're going to cry out and say, blessed is he that comes in the name of the Lord. And then the deliverer shall come out of Zion and turn away ungodliness from Jacob. The 67th Psalm, they're back there, and so I'm going to read that, and that'll be it. God be merciful unto us, and bless us, and cause his face to shine upon us. What for? That thy way may be known upon earth, thy saving health among all nations. Let the people praise thee, O God. Let all the people, speaking about the Jews, praise thee. Oh, let the nations be glad and sing for joy. For thou shalt judge the people righteously and govern the nations upon earth. Let the people praise thee, O God. Let all the people praise thee. Then shall the earth yield her increase, and God, even our own God, shall bless us. God shall bless us, that is Israel, and all the ends of the earth shall fear him. And God is going to take this people, this despised, hated, backslidden, Christ-hating people, and someday take away, the deliverer comes out of Zion and takes away ungodliness from Jacob, and he'll write his laws into their hearts and cause them to walk in his ways, and they will do a job and bring blessing to this world. You only have to read about what is going to happen in the book of Isaiah, of what God is going to do when they're going to actually, and they have these words in inside the door in the glass house in New York, way out of context. They are then going to beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. And the nations will learn war no more. But God is going to use Israel to be what? Not the head, not the tail among the nations where they are today, but the head among all nations. God will bless them, and then through them are going to bless the earth. It seems difficult to believe, but had you seen Saul of Tarsus walking out of that Damascus gate with those letters in his pocket, exceedingly mad against the Christians, you wouldn't have held out much hope for him. Can you imagine what kind of blessing there's going to be in this world when you get 144,000, just like the Apostle Paul, roaming the world? They won't have to go like our brothers going to Cameroons and learn the language. They already know the language. They won't have to go there. They're already there. And God is going to use them to the blessing of the whole world. So let's pray for Jerusalem and pray for Israel.